You are listening to a podcast from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.
My name's Jo, and this is Camden Community Radio. I'm here today with Dr. Liz Davis, Jane, and Freddie from Camden Community Radio. In the early 90s, Liz was a social worker who blew the whistle on Islington Children's Home scandal. She now runs the Islington Survivors Network for victims of the abuse and people who can provide more information into the investigation.
Okay, and Jane is here because you were in the care of the Islington childcare during the 80s as well.
Yes, I was brought up in care from when I was born until when I was 18 years old.
We'll get on to the Islington Survivors Network and what you do. But first, let me ask you a bit more about how you found yourself blowing the whistle on the scandal back in the 90s.
Okay, thanks for asking me, Jo, because I worked in Islington as a social worker between 1986 and 1992. And I'd worked in a number of small offices, but I was in one office on the Hornsey Road, and there were so many young people coming in, and I thought, this is very unusual. And especially really early in the morning, like when I'd get there, there'd be a queue at the door about 9 o'clock in the morning. And it took me time to realise they'd been sleeping in the park, that they were hungry, that they were all very neglected children. Some were missing from care, some were running away from home, and so on. And I slowly just said to my team, we'll make them the absolute priority. When a young person comes in, we see them straight away. They mustn't wait. And we get to know them and find out what's happening here. And they all had loads of problems. They're into all kinds of petty crime, mental health problems, drug misuse, all kinds of things. I said, don't focus on that. Just try and find out what's happening here. And that's what we did. And very, very slowly, piece by piece, we found out about the big network of abuse that was going on within the Islington Children's Homes. But at that time, some of those children I put into those homes, and I have to live with that because I didn't know the homes were abusive. And so it was following their cases through in those homes that I realised what was happening on, and that the networks of sexual abuse within the community were connected with the networks within the children's homes. And I raised this at a neighbourhood forum, which was like a little political meeting locally, and I said I was very worried about rings of child sex abusers in the area, and I was absolutely told off at the time for raising it and told I shouldn't have done that. And then that began, I started investigating with the local police, who supported me very well, the police at that time. And we interviewed lots and lots of the young people, and we began to find out a great deal more. And I left in 92 when I was asked by a senior manager to place a child in a home where I had alleged that they were part of the abuse network. And I thought, no, I can't do that. Absolutely can't do that. And that's when I left the authority.
Wow. That's really brave try to do. The Islington Gazette has recently been reporting on historic abuse of children in Islington Council's care. And I got a letter back in the early 90s. It would have been around the time, Liz, when you were was leaving.
Yes.
The council, social services. And yeah, the letter was from Islington Police. And it was about a man who had been abused while he was in care. And they wanted me it seems that they thought that I was like a witness, but I wasn't. So I rang them up and told them that I, you know, couldn't help them with the case, that, you know, I hadn't seen anything, but I had myself been in care for approximately 4 years, 3.5, 4 years, and that I had been abused on, you know, different levels. But they didn't seem at all interested. So last year, 2016, March, I read a story on the front page and inside the Islington Gazette about a man. He was standing behind, in front of a children's home on that's now shut down. And, he was all shadowed out. And he was telling about his experience about being in care in Islington and how he'd been abused. And I thought that he was very courageous, maybe, and I thought I would keep the paper so that I could tell my story later on, maybe. So I did ring up and I spoke to a journalist called James, and he said that I could do a story, and I said I didn't want to do that. And he said, well, I could put you in touch with somebody that you could talk to who's been running a network for Islington survivors of child abuse. So that's what I did, and that's how I got to meet Liz and tell her my story about being in Islington Council care from 78 to 83, 4.
Yes, Jo, and we met, and we've had a lot of people come forward now, survivors from... we now got 22 homes that we know Islington ran. We thought it was only 12, but it's now up to 22, and we've had about 50 survivors come forward. And like with you, the first thing we do is get a little idea how long a person was in care and how many homes they were in, which homes and so on, and any main issues that took place. And then we try and get hold of the care file, because a lot of people don't realise that the file belongs to you and it's your right to have a copy of it. And so we've got good links with the council now, and they help us to find people's files. And that's the first step, really. It's a very big step, because once we've got the file, I then sit with the survivor and we go through it very slowly, if that's what they want to do. Some just want to take it away. Some want to leave it in my office and not look at it. And so everybody has a different reaction. It's quite frightening to suddenly see your file. And then after we've got the file, we've talked through it and we've got some idea, we think, well, what, you know, would you like to take these issues forward and try and get some redress for what you've been through? And then we try and arrange an interview with the appropriate lawyer and see if we can go further with it. And also, if they want to speak to the police, then we support them in doing so if we think there's possible prosecutions. But of course, a lot of the abusers have died now, or we don't know where they are. Quite a lot vanished. Quite a lot went abroad. But, you know, the police are willing to look at any cases that we bring to them. And initially we do that with the police anonymously. We give every survivor a code, survivor A, B, C, D, and we speak to the police and say, well, we've got three survivors who've got something to say about a particular person. That's how we take it forward.
Well, yeah, we'd like to ask more about that and how the Islington Survivors Network, what you do and what you've been doing recently. But Jane, you're here. I don't know if what Joe said is similar to you.
Yes, absolutely. I, like Joe, was under the care of Islington Social Services, and like Joe, I was in my late 40s before I even acknowledged that in my head, really. And like Joe, it's only been a couple of years, or a year, not even a couple of years, since I met Liz and realised that there was even an organisation or anyone out there that would even want to listen to our stories or support us. I was totally unaware of any networks or support groups that would there for people that would been brought up in care. But since being meeting Liz and many other survivors that have come forward through ISN, I've realised that it's important to talk. It's important to have our story out there, regardless of how long you were in care and what your situation was when you were in care. Islington Social Services are working with us and they are listening to us now, but they have to address the issues that they're, for many years, you know, there was a duty of care that they didn't acknowledge.
Maybe we should talk a bit about the Islington Gazette and the stories that they've been running recently, which Liz, the Islington Survivors Network, have been involved with. I mean, helping them. Did you come to them with that story? How did that come about?
Yes, we approached the Gazette because we want the stories to get out there so more people will come forward and know about what we're doing. And also to call to account those who were responsible for the horrors that happened. And that's really important. I mean, perhaps I should just briefly say that in the 90s, when I left Islington, I went to Scotland Yard with a suitcase full of evidence. And, you know, some things were investigated at that stage. But there was still a lot that was never investigated. And it was at that time that the Evening Standard took on the story, and there was a massive exposure. There's been over 300 media articles of what happened in Islington. There's never been a documentary, but there has been quite a bit of news coverage. So the Gazette is like the most recent example of a brilliant investigative journalist who really, really, I think, has done a brilliant job in these four articles.
Other than voicing the story, is there anything else direct that are in your objectives to get from the council? So are you, apart from making the story better known and better documented, what are the objectives of the Survivors Network?
We've got a number of objectives. The very first thing we want is a police-led investigation, because some of the abusers are still out there. Children could still be at risk. And it's very important that all the accounts of abuse within the homes are analysed properly and collated with what the police know about any of these people as of now, and then to bring them to justice. That's the first thing. And we call it police-led because we want Islington Council to work very closely with the police in providing all the documentation and so on. And they've pledged that they will do that. So that's the first thing, is to achieve prosecutions and to achieve some justice, right, and to protect current children. The second thing is redress for all the adults who were in care, to get some redress for all the terrible things that they experienced while they should have been being cared for as children, and that didn't happen. So that would be a civil legal case, and we're very keen to get that established. I don't know, people may have heard about the Lambeth survivors who've now got blanket payments as a compensation. Lambeth Council has accepted full liability for what happened to the children in Lambeth's care. And we want to achieve that with Islington Council. The leader has responded to the Gazette and given a full apology. An apology is not an acceptance of full liability.
So I'd like to talk about the first day that I went into a second council home. My social worker did say that it wasn't appropriate for girls to go there, but because I'd never felt wanted, loved, I just did what I was told some of the time, most of the time. So when I did get there one morning and I was on the telephone using the payphone to speak to a friend, and I was attacked from behind, you know, the handle, the phone of my face that I was talking to was pulled away, and my hair and my head was, I was like in a chokehold and thrust back, and then my feet were, you know, on the ground and I was being pulled around and slung through a swing door while being shouted and sworn at. And, you know, at no time did I see this man's face, but he was strong and he was just telling me what rubbish I was. And I think, you know, I may have sworn, but I wasn't, like, shouting and swearing every other word. And he was telling me that I was quite acceptable if I wanted to leave, that he would make me cheese sandwiches to take with me on my journey back to wherever, London. They didn't care. They did not care. And what I took for care was not care. It was, you know, I told you, know, I'm unhappy, I'm having sex and I don't want to. And it was just a doctor came that used to come in and they put me on the pill, me and a few other young girls, and I just turned 14. So I just went along with it because I couldn't speak to, there was nobody.
Does anyone want to?
Yeah, I'd like to come in and say that, you know, exactly what Jo was saying is, what she's saying is we didn't have a voice. And so part of doing this today is addressing that we didn't have a voice. And now it might have took us half our lives to get to that point, but we have to find our voices. And that's part of what ISN is doing. It's supporting and enabling us to have a voice. And that is amazing.
Can I ask, Liz, maybe, how, hearing about these stories, first of all, they're obviously kind of just, they're truly horrible. How did this, from your understanding, how did people get away with this? Or was this organised, or was it just people, was it a complete lack of oversight? How do you end up with such terrible care?
We've been doing quite a bit of research into this, and most of the Islington homes used to be outside London, and there was a decision made in the 70s to bring all the children within Borough. And at the same time, that's when the paedophile information exchange had become quite influential and was infiltrating the systems of care. So it has to be really thoroughly examined what their role was at the time. We have a national inquiry now. It's only looking at child sexual abuse. A lot of the accounts we've heard, like you've heard today, were of horrific torture. And some of the practices that went on, you know, we've heard so many accounts now of children being taken on miles and miles and miles of hikes in the woods at night and being abandoned there, and having to try and find their own way back. I mean, that's cruelty in the extreme. And then we've heard of stories of many, many holidays. Now, these were the most neglected, emotionally abused, physically abused, sexually abused children that you could find. And yet they were being taken to exotic holidays, Rimini, Riga, or Pyrenees, you know, so many different parts of Europe. And you have to ask the question, why? What was this about? And some of the stories indicate that it was a kind of trafficking. All this needs very, very thorough investigation. It's why we're asking for a police-led investigation. Best we can do at the moment is take all these accounts very thoroughly and then collate all the evidence.
Is there anything, sorry, can I ask you, Joe, if there's anything that could make things, that what would make it anything better for you, or that you want now, that would redress something in any way?
Well, I'd like Islington Council, or what is his name, Watts,
Richard Watts.
Yeah, Richard Watts to...
Who's Richard Watts?
The leader
of Islington Council to be like cooperative and help fully with the investigation, because there are, yeah, some of these men still alive that work there that were abusing not just myself but other girls, young women and young men. But at the moment, you know, I've had I've been ill for 25 years with type 1 diabetes, and it's very challenging, especially I'm now, you know, in my early 50s, and I've got, you know, I've tried to get help with my housing, but I just am getting nowhere, and I've been going round and round, and I'd really appreciate it if the council would help me. And
we also want recognition of the impact of the trauma, however many years it is that trauma's there. And you know, a lot of survivors, they're working, they're doing all kinds of things, and but underneath there's that trauma. Yeah. And it can hit them at any time. It can be triggered. Just reading the articles in the Gazette triggers some of them to remembering things they hadn't remembered before, or you know, makes them relive their experiences in the most frightening way. So we want that understood. Also, the benefits system, which is declaring quite a few of them that we know as fit for work. Well, they might work for a week, but maybe the next week they're in deep trauma again. Mm. So that's not being understood. The impact, what it means being a survivor of this level of horrendous child abuse is not being understood by the benefits system. And so that's something we're asking the council to help negotiate for us. To be quite clear, the council are being very helpful to us at the moment, and they are giving some of the survivors extra points because of they've been in their care. So that's really important to recognise. I also just wanted to comment that there were 14 inquiries in the 90s, wow, all about what had happened after the expose in the media. But now we have to really look at who commissioned those inquiries and what their role was,
yep,
and whether they were actually sincere at all. I've always said they were all a cover-up, completely. I gave evidence to some of them, and I've only very recently got copies of those inquiries through Freedom of Information, and nothing that I said in hours of evidence features in these reports at all. So, you know, I've only just found that out. But the final report in 95 made a categorical statement that was a social worker that said 61 children in her office were victims of a network of abuse. And they said there was no proof of that whatsoever. Well, that was me. And that, you know, I had plenty of evidence. I was trained to evidence my work. So, you know, we need some justice for all those children that were not believed at the time that they were victims of an orchestrated abuse network. And some, just to say the other thing, if a child spoke out, some of them were threatened with being sent to a secure unit, and some of them were put in secure units. One survivor was told us she was in solitary confinement for weeks, you know, and that she was trying to speak out. So, and another one said he was taken to visit a boy in secure and was told if he spoke out, but his abuser took him, and said, if you speak out, you'll end up in here like this child that you're in care with. So these were the threats that were going on as well behind the scenes.
Okay, so I'd like to say thank you to Liz, Jane and Freddie for letting us do this interview podcast today. Thank you.
Thank you for asking us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You're listening to a download from Camden Community Radio.
www.ccradio.org.